Please now let us welcome Reporters Without Borders. And we have Lucie Morillon and Grégoire Pouget. Please give them a warm round of applause.
Thank you, guys. Sorry again for the technical problems, but I think we're all good now. I just wanted to tell you that it's a real pleasure for us to be at the CCC. It's the first time that Reporters Without Borders is officially represented here. Of course, we have members and supporters who come very often, but it's the first time that we are officially here, and we want to thank the CCC organizers for giving us the floor today and for giving us the opportunity to reach out to you guys and to speak before a slightly different audience from which we are usually used. So, I wanted to tell you a little bit more about Reporters Without Borders, because you probably wonder what Reporters Without Borders is doing here, what is a bunch of journalists here. We are journalists, of course, but we are also activists of freedom of expression, and I think that's also the case for many of you in this room, and that's why we are here today. We want to tell you more about what we do, what we plan to do, and what we may be able to do together. Reporters Without Borders, as you may know or not, is an international press freedom organization. We'll come later on to where we are based, what our network, and so on. But one important thing that you need to know now is that our activity is really to defend freedom of information. We believe that what we do is not only to support journalists, but to support everyone that is involved in the business of spreading the news. And what we do is not supporting only journalists, but it's supporting everyone's right to be informed, my right to be informed, your right to be informed. We have, the mandate of the organization has, of course, evolved. We were created in 1985, and at the very beginning, it was a bunch of reporters who would go to conflict areas, war zones that were not covered well enough by the mainstream media. They would do some reports, they would come back and try to give this report to televisions, newspapers, and so on. And this lasted for a few years after the founders of the organization realized that the main issue was not really about foreign reporters going into these countries, but the real issue was how do you empower people in the countries to be able to report the news, to be able to let us know what is really going on. And they changed the mandate of the organization from basic reporting to actual support to local journalists who were trying to do their jobs in sometimes terrifying conditions. And another evolution in our mandate is also the fact that we were basically working more with traditional journalists at the beginning. And now we also defend bloggers, netizens, people who are being arrested, harassed, or killed for their activities, not only offline, but also online. So that has been a big change to Reporters Without Borders actions, but I think it makes us much more relevant about the issue of freedom of information. Freedom of information is no longer something that belongs to a specific class of journalists, but it can be any of our business. And we've seen it in many countries this past months, especially. So these are the three main chapters we look at: freedom of information and citizen issues. Then we look at Reporters Without Borders resources and how you may want to get involved, hopefully. Why defend media freedom, journalists, and bloggers? That's what I was basically saying earlier. Without a free information, no cause can be heard, no human rights violation can be reported. We work with a lot of local journalists who keep denouncing human rights abuses, corruption, a lot of issues that are very important to their citizens in their countries. And of course, that sounds pretty obvious, but people need accurate information to make some decision, whether it's on political, social, or economic side. Here are some specific examples of information that has proved to be vital to the public. The tainted baby formula scandal in China was revealed on the web after months of covering up by the authorities. Why? Because the story could have broken right before the Olympic Games, and it would have been terrible for China image. So the authorities preferred to cover this up, and we had several hundreds of thousands of babies were contaminated by this tainted milk from San Lu. And you know, you see some of the bottles actually up there. And also, this is one example of a demonstration by a woman who lost her baby over there. And it's been amazing to see how, first of all, this entire thing has been covered by the authorities and how people were trying to seek justice and to spread the news about this to prevent that more babies would be contaminated, how they were also repressed, arrested by the authorities. So that was really a big deal to us. And it's, I think, a very telling example of what criminal censorship can be. Also, other stories that are very important and to the public and that are of a lot of interest to netizens around the world, it's also corruption stories. I mean, Navalny in Russia has done a great work of denouncing a lot of corruption stories. We've seen also some cases of impunity denounced online thanks to netizens who didn't want to just let this go. I'm thinking of China. I don't know if you're familiar with this example, but there was the son of a local official who was responsible for a deadly car accident. And when he killed this girl, he actually left the place saying, go ahead and try to arrest me. I'm Li Gong's son. And well, that was a terrible example of how some people can think they can do anything with impunity. But the netizens didn't let it go. And online, the information spread. People were absolutely outraged. And the guy who was responsible for the accident was eventually found and arrested. So that shows the power of the internet, the power of netizens when they come together and they decide to fight for a cause. Another sort of information that is vital to the public, maybe we talk a little less about it. I mean, there's this tainted formula, baby formula scandal, of course, but in Saudi Arabia, when Saudi Eve or other blogs that are being, let's say, held by women are censored, it's not only a basic question of censorship, it's also a place where questions linked to breast cancer, for instance, cannot be discussed. So this closing a website like Saudi Eve or trying to block it, to filter it, is also a way of preventing women to have access to essential health issues information. Well, there are many other cases, but I will probably go to the next next topic. We've seen in 2011 something pretty new. Netizens were killed in Mexico because they denounced or they covered organized crimes issues. I don't know, for some of you who read Spanish, this is one note that was left next to one body of one of his killed netizens. And it's basically a message sent to this woman who was killed and also to all users of social networks to basically warn them about what could happen to them if they continue to cover what the cartels do online. That's a pretty strong message. It's not only journalists who are killed in Mexico now, it's also netizens and bloggers. that actually leads us to, I don't know if you saw this report, we published it on the 22nd of December. These are key figures for 2011. I'm gonna just do short, but we try with our networks and so on to monitor and to assess as much as possible the extent of the censorship and of the attacks on journalists, bloggers, and so on. And these are the figures of journalists killed, kidnapped, arrested, attacked, and bloggers and netizens killed, arrested, attacked. And what, I mean, the general trend is that it's becoming more and more dangerous to spread information. You can see here, you can see it there. There has been an increase in the number of journalists killed, specifically in Pakistan and Mexico, which are the two most dangerous countries for reporters. But also you can see an amazing increase of the number of journalists and bloggers also arrested. For journalists, there were more than 500 in 2010, and we more than 1,000 in 2011. So that's really an incredible increase. And why is that? I mean, clearly this was linked to the Arab Spring. People went in the street. The story was in the street in 2011, and journalists, bloggers, net journalists who improvise themselves, citizens, sorry, who improvise themselves as journalists, were targeted because they had to come down to report the news. This is clearly not only because of the Arab Spring, but also because of all the protest movements that have inspired around the world. And also it's due to the brutal response of authorities of countries that were not directly affected by the Arab revolutions, but that took some measures to strengthen the repression in order to avoid the spreading of the movement. I'm thinking of China, Vietnam. We have not talked about it as much as what happened in Egypt, Tunisia, but clearly the repression has been very strong, not only online with censorship of Jasmine Revolution World and so on, but also physically arresting a lot of journalists and netizens. I mean, China is before Iran and Vietnam the biggest prison for journalists worldwide today. And actually, we have 129 netizens in jail as of today, and 171 journalists in jail. I mean, all of us for informing ourselves. I'm thinking today especially of Nobel Peace Prize Liu Xiaobo, who's the only Nobel Peace Prize recipient in jail today. That's why we have actually our Free Liu Xiaobo t-shirts, and you can find them online on our website. We do also think of Michael Nabil Sanad in Egypt. His health is very worrying today. He's been arrested earlier this year, and his only crime was to question the role of the army during the revolution in Egypt. So that tells a lot about the situation today in the country. That was also one of the lessons we heard from 2011, also in 2010, the role of social networks as mobilization and news transmission tools. Anyone was able to send information, to cover the news, and we've seen here how traditional journalists had an interest in working with bloggers, netizens on the ground. I mean, how can you get today image from China, image from Syria, if you are only working through traditional journalist networks? You can't. I mean, you have to be in touch with people on the ground. They are the one who take risk, but they continue. They want us to tell the rest of the world. They want us to tell other Syrians and others in the region what is going on, so that there's a solution found today to the issue. And thanks to the internet, thanks to social networks, and thanks to these very courageous journalists, netizens, we are today able to follow up what is going on, to follow live the repression, the demonstrations, and it's something that is very new. I remember in 2007 when the monks, when we had the Saffron Revolution, the monks revolted in Burma, and it was something that we were able to follow live. Clearly, the repression was very strong, but compared to what happened in 1988, where also the Burmese dissidents were very severely repressed in Burma, we were at that time not able to get live coverage, of course, and we received some footage, some images, but very few of them, and weeks or months after the bloody crackdown happened. So that's something that is not possible anymore today. And we've talked a lot. I didn't really like this idea. I mean, a lot of people were talking about Facebook revolution, Twitter revolution. I mean, clearly they played a role as sandboxes. They helped spread the news and so on. But we shall not forget that these were before and foremost in Tunisia, in Egypt. These were revolutions, human revolutions. We have to make sure that the online mobilization was finding an offline echo to make things happen. And that's, we had really people going down in the streets, taking risks, being killed, being shot, because they wanted to change things. So that's, we're just coming back quickly to the citizen journalists and the importance they have, especially in countries where the mainstream media are under the control of the government. These are the ones who cover the news. It's thanks to some Vietnamese bloggers, for instance, that we are aware of the bauxite issue and the environmental problems it has caused in the country. You won't find that coverage in the official media. And you know, anyone can be a citizen journalist. You can be. Anyone can be. A blogger can be, of course, a citizen journalist, but also netizens, lawyers, human rights defenders. We've seen that there's a wide range of people that decided to step in and to help the flow of information. Sorry. And I mean, we're very humble about how the local people, the local journalists, the local bloggers are the ones who are really in danger, the ones who are taking the risk, and without them we wouldn't be able to do anything. We try to provide them as much assistance as we can, and I'm just going to tell you a little bit about our activities. The basic one, to be able to take action to defend online freedom, we need to have facts, we need to monitor online free speech and cyber censorship. So we do some fact-finding missions to different countries. In some countries, we go as journalists. In some countries, we go as an NGO. And in many countries, we just enter as tourists. We run the risk of being expelled, but that's not a lot compared to what the local journalists do. Some of my colleagues were recently in Libya, others in Mexico. We try to be on the ground as much as we can so we can get reliable information, and we try to be also very cautious about the local contacts we make or not when we decide it's too dangerous for the people there. This is a screenshot from our website, the internet chapter, just to give you an idea of what kind of action we've taken recently. In Democratic Republic of Congo, we denounced the blocking of SMS messaging just after the elections and the unrest that followed the contested re-election of President Kabila. And it's very interesting. I don't know if I can see it here, but let's see. We had an answer from, we wrote an open letter to the Interior Minister of Democratic Republic of Congo. I don't know how many of you can speak or read French here, but basically he didn't like our letter, and the answer is pretty telling. We cannot see everything. Let me just briefly translate for those who don't understand. He's basically explaining that he's the one who took the decision to cut SMS messaging service, and in consultation with other authorities in the country, and he's saying that his mission is to guarantee public order and citizen security, and especially in these electoral times that was violent and agitated. And he's saying that the government does not take any instructions or receive lessons from anyone, including Reporters Without Borders. And he's the only one to be able to assess the opportunity of conserving or canceling the measures it took. He's aware of the financial loss for companies, especially telephone telcos, the population, and the state itself. That's one of the issues we actually wanted to highlight. And he's saying that next time you write to a minister or any other authority, we should use a more courteous and responsible language, and he forbids us to give him orders. So clearly our letter was not well received, but I think we were not the only one, of course, to denounce this situation, but I think that the fact that we as an international organization took a stand on this issue helped partly to change and to restore the SMS service. We also welcome the release of a blogger in Egypt, Mr. Abdel Fattah. We also published a press release about in China another cyber dissident who was going to jail. We had three cyber dissidents who went to trial this week. We also publish something about the Maldives, where a blogger was victim of religious intolerance. We also relayed the news about the release of Razan in Syria, and also about Kazakhstan, when the communications were cut in one part of the country that is marked by unrest right now. We also denounced that. So that's, you know, you can see that we try to intervene in many countries, different cases, to help the people we defend. We also publish every year a list of the enemies of the internet. The new list is coming up on March 12, World Day Against Cyber Censorship. And in March 2011, we had as enemies of the internet Saudi Arabia, Burma, China, North Korea, Cuba, Iran, Uzbekistan, Syria, Turkmenistan, and Vietnam. You can also see the list of the countries under surveillance, where we have, you know, Bahrain, Belarus, Egypt, Eritrea, but also democratic countries such as France or Australia. I mean, I guess you all have in mind the three strikes law in France, which is one of the reasons why the country was on this list. Okay, I will have to to make it short. So this is a map that help us visualize where these countries are, and clearly the new list is going to be updated for this next World Day Against Cyber Censorship. Another thing that we do is very important is the advocacy work for jailed or harassed bloggers and media under pressure. So we can launch some awareness campaigns or relay some campaigns that already exist. Like Razan Hadawi in Syria, we did relay the campaign that was drafted by one of her friends. For Liu Xiaobo, we also created a campaign, and we try to relay it as much as possible internationally. This is an example of an online demonstration we held in 2009. We offered people to actually choose which country they wanted to demonstrate in. This one is example of Burma, and people would choose between different slogans. That's it. We have a tourism campaign. I will put some material here for those who want some postcards and so on. I don't know if you can read the slogan from here, but this is about Vietnam, and it says, "Fuck human rights, book a vacation in Vietnam." The idea is not to call for a boycott of tourism in Vietnam, of course not, but we just want tourists to be aware of what is going on in the country and how repressive the regime is. This is also one of our actions. We have occupied embassies, tourism agency in the past. We are usually arrested, but it doesn't last very long. This is in front of the Syrian embassy. It's an action we took in last May for World Press Freedom Day. And we, as you can see, we launched some painting on the walls of the Syrian embassy in Paris. And the slogan was, it's not blood, but ink that should be spilled. We are denouncing the arrest, the killings, and the censorship happening in the country. It was very well covered by the media, and we got a good feedback from Syrian activists who were telling us that they needed more this kind of actions. We also provide financial, judicial, and material assistance to netizens, their families, media online. I think my colleague Grégoire will tell you more about it later. And this is also in Haiti, a few days after the earthquake, we were able to set up a media center for journalists and anyone who was interested in information sharing, and a mobile cyber cafe that was going from one camp to another so that refugees could have information. The idea was to support the relief efforts and continue to spread information about where to find water and, you know, many other important issues. We also, Gregor will tell you more about it, but we also provide training, guides, and tools to help defeat censorship and better understand online security. We also support online media and websites under pressure for reporting sensitive news. We have denounced the pressure against WikiLeaks supporters and the treatment reserved to Bradley Manning. We also lobby government to prevent them from passing a dangerous law that could have some bad consequences for online free speech. And we raise awareness on corporate responsibility issues. I would have liked to have more time to talk about it, but I'm happy to continue this conversation later. We were among the first ones to denounce Yahoo's involvement into the Shitao case in China, when Yahoo gave some information that helped sentence Shitao to 10 years in jail. And we have done a lot of pressure on companies to make sure that they would be held accountable for their activities. We currently support the Global Online Freedom Act that has been introduced in the US, and hopefully coming soon a European version of this bill with stronger options for export control of material that can be used for surveillance in countries where it's used against dissidents. Just to give you an idea of how much people work for us. Our headquarters in Paris, it's about 30 people, but we can rely on a network of 140 correspondents worldwide. We have a network of partners, local organizations in Belarus, in Democratic Republic of Congo, in Latin America. I mean, we have about 10 of us local organizations that work with us. We also work with other NGOs that are specialized on human rights and other issues. And of course, we have on-the-ground contacts, activists, members of civil society, and so on. And we're currently developing a network parallel to this network of journalist correspondents. We want to develop a network of netizens correspondents for RSFNet. For advocacy and lobbying, we also have representatives in Brussels and Washington and branches in 10 countries, plus a legal committee that help us draft its policy, help us send observers to bloggers and journalists' trial. We also have some publications on North Korea, organized crime, a handbook for bloggers and cyber dissidents that need a serious updating. Grégoire will tell you about it. And here it is. We're just going to tell you a little bit more about an upcoming project we have, and I think we would like to get your help on this. Grégoire, and just to let you know, Grégoire is in charge of all our cyber censorship issues and specifically of this project he's going to tell you about.
So, as Lucy explained, Reporters Without Borders has been doing a lot of things, and we have been studying the censorship and cyber censorship for now maybe more than 10 years. And back in 2010 in Paris, we created the first physical shelter dedicated for bloggers and journalists. It was basically a room in our office in Paris with three different computers and we set up on those computers Tor, a specific VPN. There was a Firefox with the fancy extension that helps you to remain anonymous when you're going on the web. And in this shelter, we also we had many handbooks we provided to people who came in the shelter, for example. Security in the box, or the very good handbook how to bypass cyber censorship, and so that's what we were doing in the shelter. This was only a physical room, and we decided to do more than that because, for example, if you are a blogger in Iran or in China. And if you need to install Tor or VPN on your computer, you can just take the plane, come to Paris, and ask a Reporter Without Borders, "Okay, I need a guide." And so we decided to move on the web. The first thing we decided to do is actually it's a part of the evolution of our mandate. We want to create a cyber shelter. What is a cyber shelter? It's it's a website on which we're going to publish censored documents. For example, a blogger in China wants to publish something on his blog about the milk case. He published this, he goes in jail, and the blog post is erased from the web. What we are aiming to do is to get the blog post that has been published and publish this post on our website. So we are going to fetch and gather many documents like that and publish them and translate them, because this is very important for us to explain that in China you can go to jail because you just publish something on milk. So we are going to translate those documents, to publish them in Chinese, translate in French, in English, and we hope later in Arabian, in Burmese, in everything. So we have to find those documents. And how are we going to do? As Lucy explained, we have many people on the ground. But we think that anyone can give us documents like that. So beside the website, there will be a kind of vault where people will be able to give us documents that could be a picture, a video, a blog post, anything. And people will be able to give us those documents in an anonymous way. So when we have those documents, we're going to check what happened. We are going to ask to our contacts on the ground to tell more about this specific case. And once we think everything is OK, we will publish this on the website. And if the author of the blog post wants to remain anonymous, because he will have more and more problems even if we publish his post, we are going to act as an editor. We are going to assume the legal responsibility for what the guy has written, or for the picture he took, or for the video he did. And so there is we want to raise awareness on these cases, and we want to spread the word, because for us, in an idealistic world, the guy who wrote on the milk in China, his post has to be if you're in China, you must have access to this. So we are going to do technical stuff to spread our website. We are going to massively mirror our website. So we are working on that, actually, and we are going to need a lot of help in order to mirror our website and to copy all those documents. So we are also providing trainings, as I told just before, back in 2010, in our shelter, in our physical shelter. So we gave handbooks and different tools, and we explained to the people who came how they could use it. For example, there were a group of Iranian bloggers that was in Paris. They were in Paris, and we helped them to discover those tools. And last March, on the 12th of March from this year, in Geneva, the Swiss section of Reporters Without Borders, with Telecomics. Hi guys, I don't know if there are any of you in the room. They organized. It wasn't actually training, but it was very very interesting, because it was an event where journalists and bloggers meet. Journalists need circumvention tools. They need to protect their sources, so they need to know how they can do that. So they need technical skills, but journalists don't always have those technical skills, and people like the guys from Telecomics, hackers, they do have that. So what they did in Geneva, they invited those two groups of people, and they make them meet and exchange. So that's what we're going to do more and more. For example, in February this year in Paris, we will do this experience again. On the 25th of February, we are going to organize an event with journalists and hackers. And if you are in Paris on the 25th of February, you are very welcome. So during this event, we want those people to exchange, and we want to, because there is a problem with journalists, we want to raise their awareness. We want to explain them that they really, really need to protect their sources. They can't just send email to people on the ground, because email, it's not secure. They can't exchange sensitive information. They have to know that if you are using, for example, Skype, in some countries, Skype can be dangerous for the guy you're talking with. So we want to do that also. And so since when you're talking about web, we had to put a lolcat image. This is a whole project. Beside the cyber shelter, beside the trainings, we also want to be able to provide to journalists and netizens and bloggers, we want to be able to provide them tools like Tor, and we are working on our own anonymous VPN, so we want to provide that. We want to provide them the tools that could help them to be anonymous. So, for example, We want to provide them live CD or live Linux system on USB key. We want to spread handbooks and, for example, TrueCrypt tools or the guide I mentioned, how to bypass cyber censorship. And there's something we want to do. We want to provide secure hosting. During the, I don't know if you've seen that, during the last election in Russia, there were many websites that has been under DDoS attacks because the press, the paper in Russia, all the different people were talking on the web. And the web was the only place where there were free information. So websites went under DDoS attacks, and we want to be able to provide them secure hosting. For example, we are going to mirror, to set up many mirror for a Russian website we are working with. This is going to happen in March, and we are already working on that. And the last things we want to do in this project is we have a specific budget, we have a specific fund in order to give dedicated grants for netizens and bloggers. With these grants, we are going to be able to buy them computers or cell phone or, for example, web server if they need more powerful web servers in order to host their website or to host any tools they can work on. So in order to do that, we are a small NGO, so we really need you. We need people like you who have technical skills in order to help us to set up Mirror. We need people who know how to raise our visibility on the internet, or the visibility of our campaign, or the visibility of the campaigns of our partners. We need also insiders in companies that cooperate with internet censorship. I don't want to mention the name, but you know some name of the companies I'm talking about. And we need whistleblowers. And then we need, because this is also something we're working on, we need the help of people of jurists who could help us to monitor what is happening in different countries, and who could help us to analyze the growing number of laws that regulate the internet, and who could help us to make some different proposition to the country who want to provide laws that are not very good for the freedom on the web. So, if you are a tech guy, what we need? We need, for example, we need to know how a country can organize its national network to make the censorship more easily. So we need people on the ground who could help us to carry tests, or we need people who knows how to make an Nmap stuff or stuff like that. We also need to know which communication tools are safe. Can we use Skype in China? So that's not a real question. Can we use RSC? Can we use Google Talk? Should we use PGP mails? Because in some cases, PGP can be dangerous, because if you are the only one in China using PGP, so you're just saying the Chinese government, hey, I'm using PGP, and maybe my mail is dangerous, so come to my house and pick me. So we need people who could help us to know which is the right tool for those to communicate with our people on the ground. We also need people who could help us to make a better handbooks. Because, for example, I got it right here. As I told you, we are working on the internet since more than 10 years, and we have many publications. For example, in 2005, we published this. This is handbooks for bloggers and cyber dissidents. And if you read it, there are many, many interesting things. But I think, for example, the third chapter is quite out to date. So we need people to help us to have better handbooks for the people that need that. And If you have a server somewhere, if you want to help us for our cyber shelter project, or if you want to help us to duplicate website that we have targeted, that we know that in next March in Russia we'll have many problems, we need people with server who can do a wget or who can use a HTTP track or async. We need people in order to mirror these websites. And if you have any other ideas, just tell us. So we need also skills, because we have a lot of campaign, and we are going to show you at the end of the presentation our new campaign. So we need people who can help us to spread the word with those messages, with our messages, or with the messages of the other NGO we are working with. And even if you are about to launch a communication campaign, we can also help you. We have a network, we have people on the ground, so we can help you. We need Twitter stars or Facebook stars that could just publish the messages on their walls, or that could just tweet or retweet our own messages. And I think that's it. That's all we see.
Yeah. Well, we're coming to the end of this presentation, because I think time is running out. If you want to keep in touch with us, here is how you can. And you can, of course, come and talk to us after this presentation. And we're going to end with a campaign, a very short video campaign, less than 1 minute, that we wanted to show you. It's not finished yet, so don't be too rough with us. It's a campaign that is on Syria, denouncing the surveillance, the arrest, and the extent of the censorship in Syria. And it plays around the well-known Siri application that exists for iPhones. You will understand once you see it. It's still very slow. We have some editing to do on the video. It's going to be launched next week, so it's not finished yet, but we really wanted to give you a heads up and show you the kind of campaign that we do.
And we need technical skills for the computer.
Il faut que tu branches ça là.
Ouais, mais j'arrive pas là.
So, il y a un, voilà, il y a un. Il faut contact, en fait, vous laissez comme ça.
Ah, okay.
Sorry.
Okay. In the meantime, while we're setting up the notebook to show the movie, if you have any questions, please walk up to the microphone, and I see there are people at the microphone already. So we have no questions from the internet at this point. Can we please first start with the first question from over there?
Hi again, great talk. Concerning your, I'm over here.
Hey.
Concerning your call for participation at the end, there was this other talk at 11:30. Your revolution just got pwned, I think, which was done by a member of Telecomix and a member of Geeks Without Borders. And in a way, they just presented what you seem to need. So they can provide, and they do provide, exactly that kind of technical assistance you're calling for. So I wonder whether you already tried to talk to them, or...
Yeah, we, and that's a great thing about the CCC, is you meet a lot of people that work on similar issues, and we've made contact with a lot of people who are, as you say, involved in projects that are similar to ours, and we're definitely up for working together and see how we can channel all this energy and good work and good practices, because that's exactly what we're here for. So yeah, we thank you, and if others want to come and see us afterwards, we're happy to continue the conversation after the CCC, of course.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, next question from over there, please.
Hi. I wonder if you know about the Turkish journalist Ahmet Şık and his book Imam's Army. He was preparing this book, and he was put into prison, and the prosecutor tried to confiscate all digital copies of the book draft. As a result, it was leaked and published, signed by several authors. And I thought you might be interested in translating it for your shelter, because it's available only in Turkish. Mm-hmm. And it's about a religious sect, Gülen sect, in police department.
Absolutely, that's exactly the kind of content that we would be interested in publishing and translating, because as Gregor was saying before, usually when we take action and we denounce the fact that a blogger was sent to jail for 10 years in Vietnam, the article itself doesn't make it to the general public, so we want to translate it, publish it. And regarding Turkey, we do a lot of work of monitoring. We have several fact-finding missions. The last one was in September, I believe, because there's a lot of problems with press freedom in the country and online freedom. So we follow very, very closely these issues, and this is a good idea for content publishing. So thank you.
Okay. I'd say one question from over here, and then we're going to show the movie.
Okay. Hi, I'm one of the hackers of the Tor project.
Oh.
And so one thing that I've noticed is that many people in this space try to provide guides. So for example, Freedom House and Internews and all these other people. And one problem is that they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And so it's really important to not be like them. Mm-hmm. And the way to do that is to work with people who write the software, mm-hmm. but also to always reject proprietary software when it is used in places where people's lives are in danger. Mm-hmm. And also to follow the money to see why people advocate for certain things and to see which properties those things have. Mm-hmm. So using a VPN that's run by Reporters Without Borders in a place like Syria sounds like a death sentence to me, whereas it sounds perfectly fine for, say, the United States in certain cases. Mm-mm-mm. And as far as all the technical questions about IRC or Google Talk or things like this, it's really difficult to know how those protocols can be safe in a world with data retention. And so for almost all of these things, the question is, why not always anonymize those communication systems? Because it seems like data retention poses a threat, especially in the West, and especially if we are the support systems for people in so-called non-free countries, mm-hmm. because we will be incriminated for helping those people unharmed. Like, the Syrian government actually reaches out to countries in the West and kills people in the West. So it's extremely important that people don't think that they're safe here simply because of that. So I wonder, how will you engage the greater community to ensure that the guides you published are really peer-reviewed and you don't repeat the mistakes of groups like the ones I mentioned?
No, of course, I think it's a very important point to make. And thank you for making this point, because that's absolutely crucial. I think we're very aware of that, and that's exactly why we come here, and when we tell you we need to update this guide, we need your input, because, of course, it's. I mean, what is at stake is people's lives and safety, so we're very aware of the importance of such tools and so on. We have very good contributors to our book, which is really outdated, so that's why we need your... We had Dan Gilmore... we had Ethan Zuckerman, Nat Villeneuve, and people like this. So clearly this was written by people who knew what they were talking about, and we want to continue this way. So please help us. And we're also very aware of the fact that one tool that can be used in one country can be absolutely deadly in another one. So that's where we have a lot of educational work to do, and not only towards bloggers, but also towards journalists who work in safe countries, and when they go on the ground, they don't take all the precautionary measures they should take. So we're working on it, and we're going to try to see how we can indeed explain that it's always a case-by-case situation, but that anonymizing everything is definitely something important. And in our shelter in Paris, we have, of course, a link to Tor. We have a lot we try to make people very aware of what you do. I mean, it's already very, very famous, and you do an amazing work, and we're happy to relay what Tor does.
But it's not only about technical skills. We need people with real strong technical skills, and what we can do as people who have contact, we are in contact with journalists, we have to explain them that those technical tools, they are here for a reason, and they should use those tools. And in different countries, you have to use different tools. So that's why we need feedback, and we can give this feedback to journalists who are on the ground in those countries.
And one last thing, we are also aware of the fact that there are many good guides out there, and they are available on our cyber shelter, on our shelter in Paris. You know, like Security in a Box, and others have done also great books. And the idea with our books is also to gather all these important skills and knowledge. But what we're gonna add also are testimonies from bloggers and journalists on the ground to explain exactly how they use these tools and how it changes also, because that's going to be the challenge to keep it updated. And the idea of making it a wiki is also to make sure that it's going to be collaborative and it's going to be updated as much as possible, because, I mean, you know that better than I do, things change very, very fast online. Shall we?
So shall we show you?
So again, it's pretty slow. So you will see some, you know, the rhythm is going to be improved, but at least, just to give you an idea. That's good. It's extremely slow.
We have to improve our movie.
Laissons, je relance. Ah, ça y est. Non. OK, we have to launch it again. Si.
Pardon.
C'est déjà passé.
Okay, I see.
I think this is just a teaser.
Okay.
And you will be able to see this movie in
short video
next year, at the beginning of the next year. Sorry for the problem.
Okay. Well then, I'm sorry that we don't have time for any more questions. Sorry for the guys waiting at the microphones, but the herald for the next talk is already there and asked me to stop at this point. Can I please ask you to use the feedback system for this talk? Take out the trash, even though you didn't take it in. And let's give a warm round of applause to both of you.